we saw the challenges for people on the spectrum in the life of the church, as well as the challenge of churches that really wanted to minister well to this population.
Hey everybody, Doc Brian here, and welcome to Doc Talks. We talk about people's troubles, trials, tribulations, and hopefully triumphs in life. Today, we're in LifeWord Studios broadcasting in over 175 languages to 127 countries with a potential listening audience of 2 billion people. You can find all of our content at lifeword.org. Today, we have with us Russell Threaten. He's been on the show before, but he has a new book that has just come out talking about autism and the church. Russell, thank you for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about what gave you the inclination or the seeing the need of having a book about autism in the church.
Well, so probably like most people that step into a space like this, it's a personal experience. I have 3 sons. My oldest son is 16 now. And his name's William Paul, and he's autistic. And so, as we learned about that from the time he was about 2, 2.5, up until even now, we saw the challenges, for people on the spectrum, in the life of the church, as well as the challenge of churches that really wanted to minister well to this population, but, probably didn't know where to start, particularly churches that aren't extremely large, that don't have the ability to programatize everything, don't have the volunteer base with special skills. I wanted to try to help churches have a place to begin. And so that's really what motivated it. Even though I was the pastor where I was at every time, it was still hard to kind of find a way for him to navigate church life sometimes. And so it's something that's been on my heart for a long time, and finally was able to pull it together and with the help of the Baptist Publishing House to get it out there.
Yeah. So many people of our listeners have probably heard the term on the spectrum. As we know that there are, you would probably be able to describe this better than I, but that there are extreme difficulties and then there's high functioning things. How do we try to gauge that, but still be sensitive, to the person?
I think, you know, most of the time when someone comes to your church, typically, you know, with family with them, you know, a lot of the time they're going to make you aware of autism in general. Now, if you've been around people that live, you know, with autism, there's certain things maybe you can pick out. But autism is so broad, particularly since they've changed the way it's diagnosed, that, you know, used to you would hear words like Asperger's. That's no longer technically a term that's used. That's part of the autism spectrum now. So you have people now who are extremely high functioning and, in fact, very successful. Unless you got to know them well, you might not even recognize them as being someone who has who's dealing with autism in their life. And then it goes that's one end of the spectrum. And then it goes all the way to those who have very, very strong physical limitations. Maybe they're completely nonverbal. They're very rigid. They can't do a lot of things physically. And so it is a very, very broad thing. And that's why, you know, spectrum is the best way to describe it as it's diagnosed now. And so as far as gauging that, I mean, that's hard because now they have levels, I think, you know, 1, 2, and 3, but even those are, it's kind of a moving target, even I think for medical professionals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So at the root of it, how do we define autism?
Well, you know, autism is defined, typically speaking, as a not necessarily developmental, but it's a disorder or a disability that is typified by some things. Typically, the major things that we talk about are communication issues, social cues. You know, you'll hear things about eye contact, and then the sensory part is a huge part of autism, that there are sensory struggles. And so it's a neurological condition, right? This isn't something that's just kind of out in the ether. This is something that's based in the neurology of an individual, and they process things differently. For a layman's explanation, one of the best things I've ever heard and actually seen illustrated is, for instance, as you and I are talking, probably in your setting, there's some things going on in the background that you, if you paid attention to them closely, you could hear them, see them, smell them. Same thing in my environment. But our brains naturally filter things down, and we can focus on what's important. A lot of times, and this is a broad brush again because of autism is so varied, but a lot of times people who live with autism, they end up taking in every outside stimulus kind of at 100%. So every smell, every sound, every light, every situation that's going on in their environment is coming at them 100%, and they don't necessarily have as great of an ability for their system, their mind, their brain, and to take those in and to prioritize them. So they're constantly dealing with all of those on, like you might say, at 100% volume. Hmm.
So is autism a diagnosis by exclusion, or are there specific testing that we see, not just physical testing of grading of how they act or how they portray their symptoms? Is there actual diagnoses or testing that leads to this diagnosis?
Yeah, I mean, I probably couldn't get real technical with you on that. I mean, there is a lot of testing that they go through. A lot of it tends to be interaction and observation, as well as kind of a testimony, if you will, by the family. That, you know, they'll say, you know, do they do this well, or they may try to work that out in a face-to-face setting. So a lot of times it is it's observational. There's not a blood test. Most of the time, you know, depending on how you read the literature and different things, there are, you know, some brain scanning things that they do in research settings, but they don't typically do that when they're trying to diagnose someone. So primarily it is through the observation of the family members or observing the individual themselves.
Yeah, you know, I know that, you know, with ADHD, there is I think it's the Vanguard study of where the parent fills it out, the teacher or the observer fills it out, and then if you score a certain points, you're either, you know, severely ADHD or mild ADHD or none. For many years, and not so recent, but I would say in our growing up years, a lot of times autism was misdiagnosed as ADHD or vice versa. Do you see that now in dealing with autistic people?
You know, again, such a broad experience there, and I think that's hard to say because of the significant shift in diagnosis. You know, one of the things you'll hear people say is like autism's on the rise. Well, I think that's true in a general sense, but it's also something that's being diagnosed differently with different standards. And it's something that we've taken things that used to be called other things and put into that spectrum. That everything's autism spectrum disorder now, ASD. And so most of the time, there's going to be other things affiliated with an autism diagnosis, whether it's ADHD or it's something sensory processing disorder, other aspects that come along with it. And so, you know, as far as it being misdiagnosed or something one way or the other, I wouldn't be able to speak to that too much, but I think it's something that's, there's some commonality with some of the observational things.
Sure. I heard a young man one time who was autistic say, autism is not my disability, it is my ability. Mm-hmm. Where they have accepted it as almost a superpower, if you will. So in your experience with your son, and talking specifically about a church setting, has there been times where he felt like he was disabled and wasn't able to do certain things? Or was there that moment where he realized it was a superpower, if you will?
Yeah, I think you know, our personal experience is pretty interesting. You know, autism isn't something my son talks about much. He knows that he's autistic, and kind of the joke, the funny thing is, the only time our son has ever told us that autism kept him from doing anything is when he got old enough to start potentially going to church camp. And you know, he has sleeping issues and things like that, and he doesn't want to be around a bunch of loud people all of the time. And I never forget, he just kind of looked at us and said, "I'm too autistic for church camp." And you know, he has different things that he's really good at. And but you know, it's interesting you bring that up, Brian, because this is a real controversy in the autism community right now. This idea where there are people out there who have what some are calling profound autism that is severely limiting, and there's the population out there that's the kind of that autism is a superpower kind of crowd, and which we can recognize. There are some people who are autistic, and even a lot of them who have very specific and significant skills, and they're very gifted in some ways. But there's a population on that extreme end of the spectrum that's feeling isolated because people, when they talk about what a struggle it is for them to live with, there's a population out there that are saying, "No, autism is their superpower," and they're like, "You don't live at my house. This is a significant struggle." I think maybe one of the best ways to frame that conversation is, I've had people kind of ask me before, you know, if you could give your son a pill and he'd wake up tomorrow and he wasn't autistic, would you do that? And part of me would say, you know, it's kind of part of what makes him, and I don't know that I would want that. But there's another part of me as his parent who wants the best for him, who knows the struggles and limitations that are there, that says, for his sake, probably, you know, maybe I would. And so it's a real struggle, and it's a real conversation that's happening. These people, there's actually a push for there to be a separate, you know, section, if you will, or diagnosis for this profound autism because of almost the pop culture autism stuff that's going on, people self-diagnosing on the internet and things like that, where it's almost become, in some circles, almost kind of a cool thing to be. So yeah, it's a strange conversation for my son. You know, he does what he does. He is who he is, and he serves where he can serve, and it's really great. But he has challenges even in the church setting.
Yeah. You talked about the pop culture and kind of being popular. I don't know how many kids I have heard say, "Well, I'm just a little autistic," who had never been even to a doctor to consider that, or even, "I'm a little OCD." Well, that's not a thing. You either have a disorder or you don't. And it kind of plays down the diagnosis of real people who struggle with these disorders. How do we approach that pop culture?
I think it's some of it you just have to leave alone, you know, because you know you can't fight the internet in some sense. But I think in a personal setting, I think when there's an ability or a relationship and you're able to have that conversation, to say kind of what you said, which is, hey, you know, this is a real thing. This is a neurological disorder, and when we say those types of things, we may mean well by it, but it does what you said, which is, it can diminish that, and in the eyes of the public, it can diminish, well, the support that those individuals might need. And well, maybe we don't need to put as much money over there because everybody's dealing with that at some level, right? No, you're actually not. And it can, I think in kind of that public opinion, which drives things like research dollars, which drives things like investment from the government and things like that, I think it can have a negative effect.
Yeah. So when we have, I'm just speaking from my church, when we have vacation Bible school or an after school program, something like that, we ask that the parents register their children, mainly so we know kind of about how many people to plan for. And one thing that I've always put on that form that they fill out online is there anything that we need to know about your child that will help us minister to them more effectively. And it seems like that any time that someone writes in that form, "My child is autistic," there's almost this inaudible gasp with the people who read these forms of, we don't know what extreme that could be. How do we approach that in that setting?
You know, one of the things that I try to emphasize in the book, and when I've done one seminar. I'm going to do a breakout at Dan Carson's youth conference here in a few weeks. And one of the things I try to emphasize is that, you know, the family tends to be the expert, right? And so if I got that as a registration form, you know, I think probably maybe the best thing to do would be, you know, they've got a phone number there. I'm going to call them and say, "Hey, you know, this is Pastor Brian over here, and we're getting ready for Bible school. We got your form, and we saw you put that on there. And hey, we're really excited for, you know, for your child to be here. We know that that's a varied experience. And so could you maybe share with me a little bit about them and anything that might help us? Because we want them to have a good experience when they come here." And I think something that simple that shows effort, willingness to learn, I think that's the biggest thing that these families need, is just someone that's going to trust that they're going to reach out to me. They're willing to try to understand, and being straightforward. You know, I tell churches, be straightforward about your capabilities, but also straightforward about your willingness to learn. Mm-hmm. Because the two ditches I always talk about, there's the ditch of, we can't handle them, so don't bring them here, which is terrible. And we see a lot of people that deal with that. I've heard lots of stories. And then there's the other ditch, which is I call the overpromising ditch, which we'll do it. Yeah, we'll take care of it. No big deal. We'll do whatever we got to do. Well, you probably are willing to do that, but you probably may not know what that actually means. And so a better thing is, hey, we want to walk with you in this. We want you here, but you may have to teach us some things. You know what? It might be good for the first couple of weeks if you sat in Sunday school with us. If you have an autistic child coming to Bible school that has some pretty extreme needs, hey, mom, would you at least would you come the first night and just kind of be there with us and help us kind of learn a few things? So in case there's an issue, we know how to operate.
Yeah.
Just that willingness is really important.
Yeah. I remember growing up in church, and there were some children who, I mean, this was 30 plus years ago, who probably would have fallen in the spectrum that misbehaved. And the pastor then asked their parents to not allow them to come back. Just don't come back to our church. And I think that's probably one of the worst things that we can do to anybody, especially if they're misbehaving. Churches where they need to be. But you and I both know as pastors that over the years, home training has become the church's training and not really done at home anymore. How do we approach those behaviors that we just cannot control, and without making that person feel like they're not welcome there?
Yeah, I think so. You know, one of the kind of things that we've said with my son growing up is this question we have occasionally, which is, is he being autistic or is he just being a jerk? Mm. Right. And that's not always easy to tell.
Yeah.
And so I think depending on the child, the situation, the family, I think they're, depending on the extreme, you know, how extreme the behavior is, I think you just need to have a plan that says, okay, you know, if we get to this point, we've got somebody that's going to step out in the hall or just go to a room, you know, we're going to talk through the parents with this, you know, this and get their input, you know, take them in here, let them cool off a minute. Doesn't need to be a fun room, because then they're going to try to go there all the time.
Sure.
Right. And so, we need to calm down. What do we need to do? Handle the situation as best we can, try to reenter. And again, if it's something that continues to happen, I think that's where we have to be honest. And not that we say we don't want you here, but hey, we're really going to need you to help us and give us some education on Show us how you handle these situations when it's going on. Can you come in for a few weeks? You know, most of those families, will they be frustrated by that? I don't think so. Most of them, some of them could be, but you know, just making sure that you're telling them this isn't something that we want to be permanent, but we want to be equipped to help your family member as much as possible.
Sure. So in your experience, could you tell us about a time where the church completely dropped the ball with someone who was autistic?
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, I could share stories, you know, obviously from my situation, my family, it wasn't as profound as it is with others, because most people aren't going to just completely, you know, isolate the pastor's child. It's going to be a little different kind of situation. But, you know, I know of a church that was nearby where I was pastoring at one time that had a young man that was coming out there, and he get in some situations and get really overwhelmed and make extremely loud noises. And, you know, it got to a point where, like you had said before, the pastor told him, hey, we can't handle him. Not really because that's what the pastor wanted to do. He was getting pressure from people that were volunteering and things like that. And I think this is where the pastor's role is the most important in this situation, which is pastor needs to advocate, right? And say, he doesn't have to be the specialist, but he has to be the one that says, we want these people here. If there is a situation where it's just so extreme, there's no possible way. Look, the family's going to be pretty aware of that. And so is there an alternative where maybe we do have somebody that can sit with this person during church? Or, you know, my mantra is always, how do we make church possible for the family? How do we work that out? So I think there's always a way forward, but the biggest failure is when we just wash our hands and say we're done. I'll give you an example. This is an autism, but the church I grew up in, there was a young lady who, I believe she had cerebral palsy, but I don't want to say that for sure. But anyways, she had a tic where every once in a while through the service, she would just clap her hands two or three times pretty loudly. And everybody in church knew this. And this was a large church at that time, probably 600-700 people. Nobody paid any attention to it. We were used to it. Well, we got a new pastor, and I would, speak on his behalf that somebody should have made him really aware of that, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. And he hadn't been there very long. And it happened as he started preaching. He didn't say anything. And it happened another time or two. And from the pulpit, he says, hey, you know, we got a nursery. You can take your kids in there. And I've never seen 600 or 700 people gasp in unison, but they did. I mean, mm-hmm. The air went out of the room. And I mean, that was just humiliating. You know, and thankfully, you know, to my knowledge, that church, you know, stayed connected. Those people stayed connected to that church. But, you know, that's not a good idea to speak from the pulpit when you don't really know what's going on anyways. But in that particular situation, somebody should have had enough sense to make the pastor aware of that. And so it was just one of those things. Everybody walked out of church, and that's all that was on their heart and their mind. Mm-hmm. They felt bad for that family. They thought, man, that pastor shouldn't have done that. And so I think that was a huge failure. Anytime you make something big like that, that's a huge failure. You keep it as tight as you can with those that are closely involved, the family, and try to work through it.
Yeah. The last church that I pastored in Oklahoma, we had two adults that were autistic. They were high functioning, but could be very disruptive. You know, so they process things differently than the way that we process things. And what I found was that if I put them in charge of something, gave them a job, that they would stay focused on that job and not be disruptive as we would perceive disruption. And so everybody thought I was crazy, but one of the guys I put in charge of the sound system, and he did the best job in the world because he could hear things that not everybody else could hear. You know, everything was clear. Everything was perfect. Everything was precise. And then I had the other guy, I put him in charge of running the slides on the projector and did an excellent job because he paid attention to things that other people may not necessarily pay attention to. So I have found that not just with autism, but with any person, if they feel that they're needed and they're wanted, They want to be there and they want to act the way that everybody else acts. They want to be the way that everybody else is because they feel like they have a spot and they feel like they're important. Now, that's not to say that there are people, you know, with even Tourette's that are in the church that may have outbursts, but we have to be sensitive to those things. My son has Tourette's, and I know that if he is busy with a task that he feels is important and needed, he doesn't have issues with his Tourette's in those moments. So how do we as pastors recognize this and responsibly give them a job or something to do where they feel wanted and needed?
Yeah, I think that's a really important part of the conversation and having individuals with autism in your church. And what you're talking about is end game, which is service, right? So I think it starts with welcome. We want you here, right? And then it goes to, you know, what some might call acceptance, which is not only do we want you here, you know, you're part of us, you know, and, you know, we overlook some of the issues that we're dealing with or we're working on that. And then we get to that place where there's kind of that full belonging, which is, you know, not only are you welcome here, not only do we like you and want you here, but you're needed here. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we miss you when you're not here. And I think service is a big piece of that, both directions. The way that I think you have to do that, again, is so case by case, is there something that's legitimate service? It's not I'm making up some pretend job, right? Mm-hmm. But there's legitimate service that this person can perform, contribute to the body of Christ. In my book, and I don't know if you know how the book's structured exactly, but you know, the book is structured as a narrative of three families with individuals in different places on the spectrum. And so in one of the examples, it was like, you know, this person, you know, he helped hand out bulletins and, you know, he would walk through and straighten up the hymn books in the pews, you know, things like that, that are real and are needed, but they fit within capability. It fits within an environment that, you know, maybe they're not good with a whole bunch of people, but that's still service, and they don't have to be around 25 people that are jostling around and loud and things like that. So it's you know, again, working with a family and figuring out where is there a real place that they can actually plug in, and what's that environment like? For instance, my son, the past couple of years, has helped out in the kitchen during Bible school, and he loves it. He's running back and forth, and he's giving snacks and all that, and occasionally he may stop and give them a song, you know, that's just his thing. So it's finding a place that's real and being willing to give them a shot and say, hey, maybe this isn't the best fit. Let's try that. Mm-hmm. We need to do that better with church people in general, don't we? Right. Let people try things without hanging them up in there for 10 years.
Right.
So.
Yeah. So, Russell, tell us where we can find more information about your book, how we can order it, how we can get our hands on it.
Okay, yeah, so it's the book's called Ministry Across the Spectrum, Autism, Faith in the Local Church. You can order it directly from the Baptist Publishing House. They have it on their website. But you can also, it's also out there on Amazon, Walmart. You can get it through any of those. It's print only right now. There's not a Kindle version at this point, but it's available out there. I think typically they're around $14 or $15 is what they've got them set at in the different places. But they're pretty widely available if you search for Ministry Across the Spectrum, and it has me listed as W Russell 3 because my first name is William, but pretty easy to find.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today and having this conversation. It's a very much needed conversation as we minister to all people from all backgrounds and in all situations. So just closing this out here, if there was one piece of advice that you would give to the pastor, the lay person, in respect to persons with disabilities, what would that be?
I would say dignity is paramount, that we treat these individuals at an age appropriate level, right? You treat them as the age they are, not as the age you think they comprehend. It will become very apparent if you need to, you know, bring level of communication down a little bit, but speak directly to them, ask them their questions. Don't talk over them to their parent next to them. Just wherever possible, treat them with like you would treat anybody else that's their age. And like I said, if you have to come down a little bit, and if the parent or the family member feels like they need to step in and help, I believe they will. But you focus on that individual, not on that diagnosis.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. You know, so many times, even outside of autism within the mental health spectrum, people begin to believe that they're their diagnosis and not an individual. And so it's important for us to recognize them as the individual and not who they are based upon some medical opinion that's out there. Thank you again for being with us here today. Thank you for watching. Of course, we're on LifeWord. You can find all of our content at lifeword.org. I'm Doc Brian. You can find me at thedocbrian.com. Thank you so much for being here today, and we'll see you soon. Goodbye.